This is The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega.
All those in favor say aye.
No,
any opposed?
Ho.
Motion passes. Committee amendment is tabled.
Mr. Chairman.
A vote on what would be one of the strictest abortion laws in the nation was tabled last week when a shouting match broke out among lawmakers in the Alabama State House.
There was no motion from the other side.
He made a motion to table.
The Alabama bill would criminalize abortion in almost all cases and would charge doctors with up to 99 years in prison for providing abortions. Alabama's bill would be the most restrictive, but it's part of a series of efforts across the country to limit abortion. Most of the legislation focuses on the sixth week of pregnancy. That's when many anti-abortion rights activists argue that a heartbeat emerges in the womb. But many medical professionals say that's not true. Here to talk us through the so-called heartbeat bills that have been passed in Ohio, Georgia, and Mississippi, we have two guests. Dr. Jennifer Conti is an OBGYN physician and clinical assistant professor in gynecology at Stanford University, and Mary Ziegler is a law professor at Florida State University. Welcome to you both.
Thank you so much. It's lovely to be here.
Dr. Conti, I want to start with you with a clarifying question here. When these laws mention the, quote, heartbeat of a fetus, what exactly are they referring to?
Well, it's a good question, and I think it's important to realize here that there is no medical basis for these laws, specifically this. And the way that they're named is intentionally very confusing and very tricky because these lawmakers are essentially trying to pull at your heartstrings to use a term or something that the general public can relate to that's not necessarily medical language. But the fact of the story is this: it doesn't matter when they essentially ban abortion. By doing it so early, they are effectively outright banning abortion, or at least that's the attempt.
From a medical perspective, though, before we get into the political issues here, what, doctor, do you see as the impact on women of limiting abortions through the first 6 weeks of pregnancy?
Well, I mean, absolutely, without a doubt, myself and my colleagues can assure you, I mean, as an abortion provider, I can tell you that this will hurt women. Most people don't even realize that they're pregnant this early in pregnancy. And that's because when we talk about people's gestational age or how far along they are, it's done based on your last menstrual period. So essentially, the first time that you miss your period or that you could even realize you were pregnant if you were being so vigilant, you're already 4 weeks pregnant. And the fact is, some studies show that upwards of 35% of women don't even have a normal, quote-unquote normal, 28-day cycle. So you're talking about a huge proportion of women who wouldn't even know they were pregnant that early.
Mary, I want to bring you in here because I would love to take a listen to how Georgia Governor Brian Kemp described the six-week abortion bill that he signed into law earlier this month. Let's take a listen.
I'm signing HB 481 this morning to ensure that all Georgians have the opportunity to live, grow, learn, and prosper in our great state. Through the Life Act, we will allow precious babies to grow up and realize their full God-given potential.
Mary, what do you make of Kemp's statement there, and is it similar to how lawmakers are presenting similar bills across the country?
It is. I think the language isn't particularly new in the sense that abortion restrictions going back for decades have been portrayed as, you know, vindicating the rights of unborn children or of newborn babies. I think what's different in part is that lawmakers are willing to go a lot further and don't seem to be as concerned about paying a price politically as they might have been, you know, even 10 years ago. So something has changed, I think, both in terms of the confidence lawmakers have that they're going to win at the Supreme Court, but also I think in their sense that they can prevail at the ballot box, even if the courts don't vindicate what they're doing.
And do we have any sense of what's prompted these laws? We mentioned several bills similar to this have been passed, including in Ohio and in Georgia. Why are we seeing so many similar measures happening right now?
Yeah, it's actually interesting because the group that sort of created a model law for so-called heartbeat laws, a group called Faith to Action, began in 2011. So this isn't a new strategy. What's new, again, is the willingness of legislators to pass these laws. So I think it's two things. The most obvious is that the Supreme Court has changed. So we have two new justices that Donald Trump nominated. And I think abortion opponents believe, I think, that this court will uphold something like a six-week abortion ban. I don't think that's correct. And I think a lot of other anti-abortion groups actually don't agree that that's correct either. There's a pretty deep strategic divide in the movement about this. But I think lawmakers are more willing to take a chance on this Supreme Court. And then I think, secondly, Donald Trump has convinced some in the GOP that you can win not by appealing to the middle, but by energizing the base. And I think these bills are kind of a way to do that too. So even if a lot of voters in states like Georgia may not be comfortable with a six-week abortion ban, the ones who are may be more excited about the issue, more likely to turn out. So I think there's some GOP politicians trying to follow the Trump playbook here.
Speaking with Mary Ziegler, a law professor at Florida State University, and Dr. Jennifer Conte, a professor of gynecology at Stanford University. And we're talking about the potential impact of so-called heartbeat laws on the right to an abortion. Dr. Conte, how do you respond to efforts by Alabama and Georgia state legislators that could criminally charge doctors for providing abortions?
I go back to, again and again, this idea that politicians are not medical experts. I care for women every single day, and I can already, you know, without much effort, think of a handful of women that I recently cared for that this would have affected had they been in a state like this, or had laws like this actually gone into place. One woman that comes to mind is a mother already, two children at home. And she noticed that she was feeling pregnant, so she took a pregnancy test thinking, well, this can't be positive. I have an IUD or intrauterine device in place. And sure enough, it was positive. And it turns out that the IUD had actually perforated or gone through her uterus, which is rare, but we see it happen. And she was pregnant, and only about 6.5 weeks before she finally figured this out. So it was not lost on her or myself that had she lived in Georgia or, you know, in a time when this law has actually gone through, she would have been criminalized. I would have been criminalized for essentially helping her when she was doing everything she was supposed to be doing.
I'm wondering, Doctor, also whether or not these laws, if they ultimately take effect, would push women to seek illicit abortions or at-home abortions or other ways to deal with this if they're unable to do it in a medical facility?
You know, it definitely could. I think that we're talking about going back to essentially a time before Roe v. Wade when we do know that women were seeking abortions outside of the medical system. And we look at other countries or studies that have been done in other countries where abortion laws have been more restrictive, like South Africa, Nepal, and you see that when restrictions go up, the maternal mortality, which, you know, these women would fall into because they are pregnant, soars. And the opposite is true in countries where abortion laws are less criminalized or more liberal. Maternal mortality rate decreases and the number of abortions does not increase alongside it.
Mary, I'm wondering, you know, we're looking here at this proposed legislation in Alabama that would make it a felony to provide an abortion after the 6 week of pregnancy. Is there also concern, Mary, in your experience, about women being imprisoned for receiving abortions, not just providers or practitioners, but the women who are in need of this of these services? And I'm thinking of countries that have all-out abortion bans, like Ecuador, for example.
Yeah, I think there are concerns. The anti-abortion movement in the United States, including in states like Alabama and Georgia, has been really clearly and consistently saying that women would not be punished. But I think what you see in countries like Ecuador is that it's almost a zero-sum game for abortion opponents because of the availability of medical abortion. And for that reason, women can get abortion pills on their own, online, and end their own pregnancies. And so if you're not going to criminalize that, there's going to be a pretty big loophole in these criminal laws. So I think there is going to be tremendous pressure on anti-abortion legislators in the states to punish women, because if not, there's going to be a pretty big hole, I think, in the otherwise stringent criminal laws. I think the other... it's kind of a lose-lose proposition, though, because the reason I think abortion opponents are saying that women won't be punished is because it's politically pretty toxic to allow for the punishment of women. So it's one of those things that I think if we're going to be in a post-Roe world, it'll be really kind of puzzling and interesting to see how anti-abortion legislators deal with that issue.
I'm wondering if you, Mary, if you have any sense of how these laws would continue to play out in other states around the country? Would this encourage other states to pass similar legislation?
There's kind of a strategic civil war within the anti-abortion movement right now about whether these laws are the way to go. So some states will certainly continue the momentum, I think in part because there's sort of a, among GOP legislators, a contest to see who has the strongest opposition to abortion. But some of the more sort of establishment anti-abortion groups like the Susan B. Anthony List or Americans United for Life think that these are kind of foolhardy bills, because they don't think that there are yet 5 votes or potentially even 4 votes on the Supreme Court to uphold a law like this. And they think instead that the way to get rid of Roe is a much more sort of slow, incremental approach that focuses on later abortions and builds over the course of years to a direct attack on Roe. And they think that pushing so fast and so hard might actually backfire and result in something that would either accomplish nothing or maybe even bring Justice Roberts over to the side of upholding Roe. So I think it's pretty much anybody's guess, because there is this divide within the anti-abortion movement, and both sides are, I think, lobbying legislators to come over to their point of view.
So, Dr. Conte, if there are more of these bills, what do you see as the impact on the medical community?
I mean, absolutely. I mean, there are certain states that we just saw out of New York with the New York Reproductive Health Act, Virginia, California. There are states that will continue to uphold Roe, even if it falls, or essentially uphold the same laws, the same message. But there are states that won't. And there are several states that are passing what we're calling trigger laws, which means that essentially when Roe falls, their states will not uphold those privileges for women as well. And I think that the closing message that I want to say, that I always tell people, is that 1 in 4 women will have an abortion during their reproductive life, which means that if you think you don't know someone who's had an abortion, you're very likely wrong, and it's probably just that they haven't told you. The other thing is that the majority of people who have abortions are already mothers. And so I think when you take these two things together, you realize that abortion is, 1, incredibly common, and 2, likely defies the stereotypes that you have about it. So if we can change the framework about how we look at abortion and look at it in more of a compassionate light, then potentially we can realize that this is normal, safe, and should be legal healthcare.
And doctor, I just want to ask you, if these laws go into effect, what options will women have who still want to terminate pregnancies in these states?
It's a tough question, because some states, like Georgia, have said that potentially they would criminalize people if they decided to leave the state and have an abortion elsewhere, you know, if they were able to prove that. But one of the things that we are looking more into, and I just actually wrote an article in Self magazine about this, is self-induced or self-managed abortions, or abortions outside of the healthcare system. We know that this is already happening, especially in other parts of the country, or other parts of the world, but also in America. And there are services that are sourcing these medications online or in other avenues. The FDA is still pretty clear that this is not something they recommend, and that you can't really vouch for the safety of these medications. But we do know that as these laws continue to become more prevalent, this is undoubtedly going to be an avenue that women seek.
Dr. Jennifer Conte is a professor of gynecology at Stanford University, and Mary Ziegler is a law professor at Florida State University. Thanks to you both for joining The Takeaway.
Thank you.